What did you have for breakfast today?
I had a almond coffee from Woolworths
Okay.
and a cheesy roll, but don't tell anyone that I ate that because I'm lactose intolerant.
This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Neural Media is an effortless and affordable content production service. We help businesses save time and money by taking away the pain of producing content. If you want to grow your audience through content production, head to neural.com/media. That's NEURALE.com/media. Create a quote and request a callback from me personally. If you want to learn more about the benefits of growing your audience, download our free series on how to create content at the bottom of neural.com/media. Listeners to this podcast receive a special 10% discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. Welcome to Uncommon, the podcast that helps you build your knowledge, skills, and mindset through interviews with unique individuals. My name is Jordan Michaelides, the CEO of Neural Media and your host. It's been 2 years since our debut episode, so at episode 100, we again decided to do a year in review. So obviously this is our second attempt, which is somewhat more casual and allows us to reflect or pause on recent topics, key changes in the business, and what the next year may hold for us. For me, personally, it's just incredibly important as a long-form content creator that we take time to reflect each year, giving us a bit of a mini break from the weekly publishing cycle, although we're still publishing each week. You know, it just gives us that ability to communicate about what's happening behind the scenes. We've got two guests this week, so my trusty companion, Lauren Lepatko, joins once again. She's Neural Media's co-founder, the Uncommon podcast producer, and additionally my fiance. Our second guest is Oliver Fisher, aka Michael Crinnell, our dear friend who is an author and previous guest in episode 46. A lot's changed for us in the last 12 months, whether it's new jobs, a new home, new clients, or prospective podcast guests. Thank you for your continued support and listenership. When we hear from you directly, it really, really does mean a lot. Just knowing that behind that download number is an actual real person. So when you send us those kind messages directly, we do love that. The next year, we'll have some very exciting upgrades to how we produce content for you, including video as well. So I think this will be very enjoyable for those who've been regular listeners of the podcast. If you want something else to listen to, go back to episode 52, where we sat down with Michael J. Aranjan, or MJ as he's commonly known, to do a year in review for year one. But if you want the show notes for this episode or previous guests, just head to our index at neural.com/podcast. As I say each week, thank you so much for listening, our regulars for coming back. This is really for you. Our newbies, hopefully you like this review enough to give us a shot further. I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Lauren Lepatko and Michael Crinnell, aka Oliver Fisher. Thanks. Guys, thanks for coming on the, it's actually not the second year, but it's episode 100. Yay!
It almost is.
Well, it almost is. 104 would be 2 years exactly.
Yeah. So we're four episodes ahead.
But 100 episodes.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Congratulations, guys.
Enter sound effect here.
Yeah. Now, I had to listen back to the episode from last year. So Lauren, I want to pick your brain first on a few little things. One, how does it feel listening back to yourself?
Surprisingly not as cringy as I thought it would be. I just listened to it before. I'm like, it's a little bit cringy, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Already listened to it 3 times because I had to edit it back in the day. So I'm just used to it now. I'm just like, this is me.
Exposure therapy.
This is what I sound like.
Now, lots happened in the last year, hasn't it? Engagement.
Yeah.
It's so funny listening back to that episode literally a week later.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, I was proposing, so that was quite funny. We obviously moved. moved house, Japan, the business.
You changed jobs.
Day jobs. What else?
You literally did everything.
Health
in that
issues.
2 months.
Largely sorted or identified at least.
Hmm.
No longer gut stuff, but it's all in me brain.
You pretty much had activity in every facet of your life.
Exactly.
Didn't you?
We were actually saying this the other night. We walked up.
I don't know
how
you didn't have a breakdown.
Walked up to Ligon.
Maybe that's why I've got anxiety.
Walked up to Ligon, had some tiramisu, and then walking back home, just talking about it. But
Last night.
So health, job, home, relationship status, and business all changing in the space of 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah. I don't know how I didn't have a mental breakdown of some kind, but I didn't.
Resilient. What's your secret?
I don't know. I feel like I am tolerable for stress, but then again, like I see my psychologist and she's like, you have high stress.
You just absorb it in your stomach.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I've learned, I pretty much dish out all of my stress through my digestive tract.
Maybe if you graphed it, though, what you're actually doing compared to your level of stress is like a reasonable.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good way of looking at it.
Whereas a lot of people just don't do anything.
Don't do
anything. And they still have stress.
And they're still stressed about it.
That's a good point.
Mm.
I think I've said this to you, but
take that to your therapist.
Don't listen to me. Just listen to Mickey.
I've given me more notes and I'll tell him stuff. Like, oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Mickey can be our counsellor.
Oh, God.
He can be the...
opt out.
Yeah, how have you viewed the last year?
Growth. That's the word I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
I know you didn't ask for one word, but that's... trying to keep it lean this episode. I talked too much in the last... There was a lot of growth. I mean, slow, but I think we've grown and we've kept going. We haven't had pod fade yet.
Yeah.
We will not have pod fade ever. It's not going to happen.
I like that.
You
that's
like
cool
the word?
Is that like an industry term? Pod fade?
Yeah. Like when you start out
industry.
And after I think 10 episodes is the average and they just stop producing.
Wow.
We had one client with a little bit of pod fade, but they sort of recuperated and they've come back a bit, which has been good for them. But it is, it's an issue. You got to constantly push stuff out. But yeah, I agree.
Smashing it.
A year of growth. Mm. If you think about it, like went from one client to four. We've now basically paid for a studio. Which
we're sitting in. You can't see it yet.
They will be able to see it probably after this episode or two.
I can see it.
No, you have a blindfold on.
Lighting, cameras, new mics. It's been definitely been a year of growth. And Mickey, you've come back.
Do we know who Mickey is?
Well,
those
who pay attention have listened to his episode. What was your episode?
But do they know his name is Mickey or is this...
Yeah, if they looked at the introduction. So we had a problem where...
Is this a problem?
Like, I don't mind people knowing, but
okay.
I want the search engine optimization focus towards my other name for those listening that are now confused, Oliver Fisher.
So your pen name is Oliver
My pen
Fisher.
Name is Oliver Fisher. Yep. So, but, you know, I think this will be more of a dual personality podcast, I guess. So
self-published author, returned from Dublin.
Mm-hmm. Belfast, actually.
I know.
But I was in Dublin and I returned, so that counts.
Yeah. How does it feel being back? It's been a few months now.
Yeah, about four, I think. Yeah. Very strange. Still strange. Still very eerie. Like, I don't know. Like, the first couple of months I was there were very dreamlike, and I feel like this is still very dreamlike. Like, because some things haven't changed and other things have. So it's kind of like when you have a dream and something's not quite right, and you're like, oh, why is that like that? But here it's just because, you know, some things have changed and others haven't. So
it's just a bit surreal.
Yeah, it's still very surreal, which is weird after still like four. I think that'll be at least 6 months before things aren't strange, which is weird because I feel like people that haven't, because they haven't seen me in their mind, like I haven't changed that much. And so they forget that I haven't been here. And they talk to me like about things that have happened recently. I'm like, I wasn't there. I haven't been here.
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about?
People do that regularly where they're living in the same town and they don't catch up for a few years.
Yeah.
And they just do.
I was thinking about this recently because I've learned a little bit about object permanence where I didn't really know that much about it before.
Object permanence.
So when you're growing up, you learn that when something leaves the room, that it hasn't stopped existing. It's coming in. So toddler, like my nephews at the moment, I play with them and they still don't have a full grip, I think, on object permanence. It's pretty straightforward. Like, an object is permanent, like object permanence. And I think that people permanence, I think social media, technology, innovation, whatever it is, like, I think that something has changed the way that we now see people object permanence. But I don't know. I'm not an expert on metaphysics or
object
whatever
permanence is. This
whatever you would need to be to know that.
Is it psychology?
I guess it's a child development maybe term. Yeah, I would think.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Now, we were chatting to MJ and he was intrigued, obviously, in your decision to move. So it was 2 years ago you decided to move to Belfast.
Incorrect.
2 years? 3 years?
I moved 3 years ago, but I actually made the decision at least a year before I left, if not more than that. I'd always wanted to move to the UK for a little while because when I was 16, my mum got wind that they were changing the way that the passports were given out. So, like, there was a loop where if your grandparents or something, they were changing some kind of law, and she decided that it would be good for me to get a British passport so that I had dual citizenship, just to make sure that I didn't lose that passport.
Who's British, your mum or your dad?
My dad is British.
Yeah, they changed it from the father to the mother.
Yeah, yeah. So I got my citizenship, my passport and stuff, and we went to the UK very briefly, but then we went on a big trip to Canada. And so it's always been, since I was like 16, it's always been in the back of my mind that I can move to Europe and because of the EU be there. So I've always kind of wanted to move to Europe at one point, just to, because, you know, most other people don't have that I felt like it was an opportunity that I should really take advantage of. And also my sister moved to England for a while and she really enjoyed it. So
why Belfast, not like London? That was the thing that MJ wanted to know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I had always thought, because my sister moved to the Midlands and she was there for a while. I think that's what it's called. And I had wanted to do that. And then I sort of wanted to move to London. But then, as I said, when we went on the trip to Canada, we spent, I think, something like 3 days in London and actually didn't enjoy it very much. So I spoke to a bunch of other people. And I just got the feeling that maybe England wasn't quite right for me. So I started to try and think of other places that I could go in Europe. And I've always been interested in Irish culture. And then it occurred to me that, you know, it's one of the best places where it's, I would still be in the UK. So everything that I knew about most of the stuff I knew about the UK would still be relevant. But that it would be maybe a bit more interesting and that it wouldn't be London because I didn't really like London. And also, I guess it's just something a little bit different. But then once I started thinking more about Ireland, I realized that I'm more interested in my roots there in Ireland and I just really like the culture and I just thought it'd be really interesting.
Why not London? I've always quite liked London, but then I realized that you need a lot of money in London, right?
Well, it's very busy. It's very, like, I don't really like crowds and I don't like, the grayness of it. Like, before I'd been there, I thought I would love to live there. But once I was actually there and looked around and stuff, I realized it's a very nice place to visit. There's very cool stuff to do and that kind of thing, but it's really not that. Like, I think that Ireland is almost, this is a terrible analogy and I'm sure people listen to this and like send me lots of hate mail, but I think that Ireland is sort of the Canberra of to Melbourne is there. So I don't know, it's quieter, it's and it's got lots of interesting stuff, but yeah, I don't know.
You think, like, it's,
I
went a bit underrated
quite a bit, sorry? I think Ireland is hugely underrated, yeah, especially now that Dublin is becoming, you know, a big tech center and you've got Silicon Docks there. It's a really interesting place. It's a very interesting place historically and it's becoming more and more interesting in my opinion. Mm. Whereas I feel like London is becoming more homogenous. No offense, London. You're amazing. You've got lots of great stuff, but it's just not for me.
Did you learn much about the effect of the GFC in places like Belfast and Dublin and so forth?
Yes. So they had, I'm going to kick myself now. I think it was called the Tiger something. Dublin basically had this amazing influx of funds and all this kind of stuff. And it was really funny on one of our tours, the Dublin guide said, you know, we had all these funds and we wanted to do some kind of installation art. And so the best thing we could think to do is make this spire. And they've got this giant spire that's basically just a complete pole that just goes up and it's got a light on the end. And they were like, this is what we came up with.
Oh my God.
I think it's amazing. It's really cool. And it helps you to find, if you want to meet someone, it's really great because at night you can see where the light is and you can find the center of Dublin. So it is a really good idea. But I thought it was really funny that the tour guide was like, this is the best thing we could come up with.
So, like, because a lot of people
call it the stiletto of something.
Interesting. Because a lot of people have been making analogies to Australia's housing situation to Ireland in 2007-08. They went through a massive housing crash. Mm. And then for the 3 years after that, it affected their economy quite greatly.
Well, that's the thing. It didn't Australia. It didn't affect us as much as everybody else. So
it did nothing. But they're making the analogy to today because of what's going on with this sort of credit crunch across the banks. I was just saying to a friend the other day, over sort of the Christmas break, it's become very... Like, I just wanted to increase... get an additional card holder for my credit card for loan and increase the limit so that we could combine our spending into that and get the points. And ordinarily, the bank would just be like, yeah, sure, no worries. You know, we've got your old credit check situation, whatever. But now, they've not only sent me like a credit limit increase form that I had to manually fill out, but they've gone to like a second layer of... you know, financial checks, which just to me sort of shows potentially how stringent they've become with credit, particularly for things like credit cards.
It's very
and
strange. It's an additional card holder. It's not even a new credit card.
No, this is for the credit limit increase, but the form, I've never seen that form before. Ordinarily, like 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, they would just send you like a form that asks you to state your actual income. Mm. And they actually ask for 2 payslips as well.
Mm.
So I found that quite interesting. And nothing is for me has financially changed in the last 5 years other than income increasing. So it's very weird. And it's one of those areas I've been fascinated to watch over the last year in particular.
Well, I was really interested because I always assumed that the UK and Australian banking system, like most other things, because everything comes from common law, that it would be very similar. But the banking over there is actually quite different.
How do you mean?
Well, for one thing, to open an account, you know, you need something like 3 years worth of history. I don't think that you need that in Australia. I'm pretty sure that you don't.
Really?
And so when I moved over there, it was a big problem. And luckily, I knew that it was a problem in advance because I knew someone who had lived there. And they said that's one thing, you know, if you're moving to the UK, you need to be very careful because you can't just walk into a bank and open an account. And you can if you have, I think it's something like £2,000 and you can just hand it to them. But again, there are restrictions and it'll be time consuming. And so it's basically, it was just better to set up beforehand. So I went through a process with, I don't know, I probably shouldn't name the bank, but one specific bank. There's a number of banks that have sister or partner banks in Australia. And so you can go in and you can set up a dual account sort of thing. So I went through this quite long process to make sure that I was all covered when I got there. I also got an emergency travel card. And when I got there, it hadn't been set up correctly, even though I'd spent months trying to say to them, I'm moving and I don't want this to be a problem. I don't want to be stressed the first couple of days that I was there. So if I hadn't had that backup, I would have been in a bit of hot water.
Wow.
And so luckily I'd done as much prep as I could. So I then went through a process and basically moved from that bank to another bank. But there's just a lot of differences. And also, you know, them having, especially in Belfast, them having the Republic of Ireland there, and so many people, you know, you can get quite quickly and quite easily through the EU to into Dublin sort of thing, and then be moving up and down. So they've got that soft border there. Mm. So it also makes a bit interesting for, like, I knew someone who was working in banking. So a lot of the stories that she would tell me would be interesting and that kind of stuff. So the differences.
Well, that reminds me because, like, obviously I work in the fintech space, and one of the things we talk about regularly, because we've got, with Brexit coming up, we've got this free trade agreement being a massive, massive deal, is organizations like Starling Bank, Revolut, these sort of digital, Mondo, I think is another one. Not
Monzo.
Monzo, that's it.
I had Monzo.
Did you?
Yeah. So
what is it like?
Completely online. And no fee banking. So it was very good. So I had my Monzo. So I had a UK account, and what I used Monzo for was that they don't have transaction exchange fees. So I would keep some pounds in my Monzo account or move them over when I was going down to Dublin. So I could pay in euro without having to transfer or change any money around. So that was really useful.
Yeah. This
highly recommend if you're living in Belfast.
It's sort of becoming like this, neo-banking sphere that people are talking about, these banks without any real infrastructure. But you can access ATM networks, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now,
just quickly on that as well, you would have found it fascinating because when I moved over there, Belfast has only really just adopted, is it called chip and pin when you...
Yeah, the pay pass.
No, just the one where you can touch. What, I don't know what's it called when you just touch it. Like, anyway, the first
pay pass.
Yeah. Paywave.
The first time that I got takeaway in Belfast, I wanted to pay like that. So not using my phone or anything really fancy, just touching my card to the thing. And the guy was like, no, we don't do that. And I was like, you have a machine that allows you. And he was like, no, the owner doesn't believe the money goes into the account. So
oh my gosh.
To pay with cash. And that I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, okay, just do it. And I just thought it was fascinating because, you know, we'd had that in Melbourne. We'd had that for sort of 5 years. And like a lot of people still use checks in Belfast. They still use cash. Like they don't like all of these new innovations and that kind of stuff.
Do you remember
when I used to work at a cafe where a lot of older people were there and I would be like, oh, here's a machine. Like you can just tap it if you want. And they'd freak out like, no. And like sometimes they'd get too close and it would just do it. Mm. And they'd be like, oh, what's going on?
It's so weird, isn't it?
It's like, it's okay. It's no different to putting it in. Like they just don't, very uncomfortable with the...
But I mean, that's the thing. And it's easy for our generation to say, oh, isn't this interesting? Isn't this funny? And I'm not saying, but I'm not saying that it's wrong or anything, because I can understand if you don't understand something, you shouldn't be using it. Because then on the other side... As I should stop saying, my girlfriend is in banking. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that. I'm sure she won't mind. But she has so many different cases where these people are just like, oh, yeah, like cryptocurrency, great. And of course, they're just sending money to somebody and then they're losing it. So there definitely is a double-edged sword there. And I'm not trying to make fun of anybody or say that there's right or wrong, but it is just, we're in a fascinating time where almost not even the present, but the future. The future for many people and the future for many societies is absolutely clashing with the old world.
It's so funny because if you go to Target and Kmart at the moment, we're in Christmas right now, Christmas New Year's period, and we've been watching these videos of people having a go at these scammers, like tax scammers and whatnot. One of the biggest scams right now is they will get you to pay for something with iTunes or like JB Hi-Fi gift cards or something like that. I think it's mainly iTunes because it loads their account and then they can withdraw that money to a bank account. And if you go to Kmart, Target, Woolworths, whatever, on those desks, you know, where you do your returns and whatnot, they've got signs from ASIC or like moneysmart.gov saying, do not pay the what is it, ATO or whatever, will not ask you to pay with iTunes gift cards. It's this big sign.
Unbelievable.
Like, and apparently I was
who would have thought
reading this Reddit and
it's so strange.
And these poor elderly people will still, like, it's sort of the commitment and consistency principle. They say, oh no, it's fine, it's, you know, and they'll still do it. And
you've read Influence, Science and Practicality, haven't you? I'm reading that at the moment.
Well, I just love cognitive biases. So yeah, it's very good. I think commitment and consistency is like a big one. But it's so weird that...
Would you always agree with that though?
What? Commitment and consistency?
Yeah. Would you consistently agree with that? Did you get it? You got it. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, this whole PayPass thing reminds me, like, we are pretty ahead in Australia, but they're definitely way more ahead in Scandinavia.
Sweden and New Zealand.
I remember 2012, we're at a 7-Eleven in Copenhagen. Or maybe it was Stockholm. And all these people just, like, you know, pay waving. I'm like, what the
dollar,
fuck is this?
Which I do now, but I thought that was ridiculous. Yeah, like a dollar, like, why would you pay wave for
a
dollar?
I was like, why wouldn't they just use cash?
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, why would you carry cash?
I
never carry cash.
It's like today, I left my card in an ATM or something like that. I don't know where it went. And I could just go on my app and cancel the card and I've already got another card coming.
Yeah,
it's so good, and it's interesting looking at how you observe yourself in that moment. But
you might like this. In Belfast, there's a Scandinavian coffee shop that only takes card, and I saw an elderly Irish man, like he was obviously from the south, and he was arguing trying to use cash in the center of Belfast, and it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, because this poor kid who'd made the coffee was trying to explain to him why they don't allow cash, and it's like, because we're in a Icelandic company and like they don't use it so it doesn't really occur to them to allow us to take cash. And he's just like, and he just threw his money down and took the coffee. And so that poor kid, I don't know, he'd have to take the money himself and like do the transaction because the guy just walked off.
Wow. How much is coffee?
Sorry to interrupt you.
How much is coffee in Belfast? More expensive than here?
No comment.
I doubt that.
I'll tell you off. I'll be brave and tell you, in my opinion, that it costs about the same, but the quality is much higher here. It took me, but there is a huge coffee culture emerging in Belfast, so I shouldn't be critical.
That's interesting. Now, if you were to look back at your experience, are you glad that you did it?
Absolutely. Do you want to circle back there? Because I feel like I kind of hijacked the conversation away from you guys reviewing your year and talking
about it. No, we can get back to that. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're glad that you did it?
Absolutely.
I guess then what's sort of plans for this year? And then MJ wanted to know what is plans for the next 10 years?
Oof.
Ridiculous question.
That's a huge question.
What? Well, I'm trying to think of that word. What's that word when like you take like something technical and you like really narrow in on it and you should just like...
Put it in layman's terms?
No, like when you're being finickety about something or facetious, I guess facetious. For this year, I'm just going to pretty much chill out until New Year's. And then...
oh, God. I've been in the toilet all year. That kind of line.
Sorry. So
2019.
So what is my plan for 2019? Well, I recently read this thing. I don't know if it's true, but apparently it's an exercise from Warren Buffett where what you do is you write every single thing that you would ever want to do in life, career. Have you heard of this before? Like write a huge thing, as many things as you can think of, everything that you would ever want to do. And then you only circle five. And so everything else is your not to do list. And you're only allowed to focus on those five things. So I thought that was a good idea. So what I'm doing now is for every 6 months, I'm sitting down and trying to get sort of five goals. So I reached one of my five goals for the last 6 months. And I'm going to start again from New Year's sort of thing. So it would have been from March because I started when I arrived back here. But I'm just going to like shave it off and just start again because four of them I'm maintaining because I didn't meet them, unfortunately, and I'm bringing a new one in. So the one that I achieved is I wanted 1,000 Twitter followers, which I got. So I'm going to swap that one out now. I'm going to try and learn SAS to an intermediary level. So that's a statistical programming software. I'm trying to learn the piano. I'm trying to learn Russian. I want to finish a manuscript and... I remember what the last one is, which is bad. Oh, a ninjutsu. I want to get to Red Stash in ninjutsu.
Okay. That's interesting.
Wow. They're still pretty big goals.
Yeah. So the idea is that you like, you try and make ridiculous goals and then if you don't meet them, you just kind of reflect and learn on them. So they're really no pressure goals.
Right.
Yeah. The idea is more to make sure I'm doing 5 minutes of at least like all of them every day sort of thing.
Yeah. In the last year, I've changed my goals. That. Like the Warren Buffett thing is really good. I think it was like a pilot that asked him. He used to own a company called NetJets. I can't remember if they still own it, but it's sort of like a, you know, you own a share of a plane and you can use it whenever you want. One of the pilots asked him, like, how have you become so successful? Or how do you become successful in life? And it was that. Is you go out and list everything and then you circle the top five and then you just focus on that for the rest of your life is basically what he said. My thing sort of changed to more of like a system. So I have like a generalized archetype or goal, let's say to be a media entrepreneur. And then each goal would have like a habit that I'm trying to instill related to that. So I'm constantly doing something towards it that would mean that I'm achieving something. And then at the end of each quarter, I write down something to reflect on the achievement to ensure that I'm growing in that direction, so to speak.
Yeah, I used to do a similar thing before I started the thing that I just described. I used to every year just write down who I am and who I wanted to be. And so then, you know, I had pretty weird things like I wanted to be quite competent as a chef. I wanted to have a reasonable competence in speaking Russian and all those kind of things. And so I think that it's more important just to be doing something like that, just to be reflecting, I think, and having some kind of, I think how you go about it is really sort of more specific to you and even and sometimes irrelevant or specific to the time of your life. But I think if you're not doing something like that, then you're probably going to get pretty frustrated with yourself because you'll look back over the year and be like,
you might not have a sense of...
I think I need to do that.
Yeah. I think it, and it doesn't have to be hard. Like, for example, the quarterly thing I do, I spend an hour every quarter reflecting on it and seeing what needs to change specific to the system. And I got this system idea from, Win Bigly by Scott Adams. So he speaks about goals versus systems. And
if you don't want to read a whole book, there's a really good article that he wrote, which I read.
Yeah.
I read the same thing.
I read the article first and I decided to get the book. I've read both these books now, but it's very, very useful because it just makes sure that you got things on track. And then you have to have habits that ensure that you're doing it. Like, for example, every week I write a diary. I'd have like a short 2-3 minute diary in the morning every day, but this weekly journal allows me to sort of reflect on how I'm going on a week by week basis towards the certain goals that I have, which I find very, very useful. Because sometimes you're thinking in your head, oh, fuck, I'm not doing this, or I'm not doing that. But when you have that reflection, it allows you to identify that you are doing the right thing, or you're getting somewhere, or if you're not on one of the goals or systems that you have. So I think it's really important. And it takes so little time. Like, it takes an hour, a quarter, and about 30 minutes a week. So I think it's very, very useful.
Yeah, I was doing gratefulness practice every morning.
Yeah.
And then I did the artist's way. So I was doing all of those exercises and doing free writing in the morning. And so now I don't know where I guess I've tried a lot of different sort of things. And I don't know if it's an amalgamation, or maybe I'm just doing one and I forgot. I've kind of forgotten. But what I am doing at the moment is, like, I forgot where it came from. But what I'm doing now is I just do free writing for about 15 minutes in the morning. I'm trying to scale it back because I've not been finding that I had enough time to do everything that I wanted in terms of my morning routine. So now I'm trying to do 2 pages of free writing. In somewhere in there, usually I'll mention whether or not I did 5 minutes yesterday of each of my 5 goals. And then I just do each letter, so like R, P, B at the top, and then I just tick off whether or not I did them yesterday. And then I try and do 15 to half an hour of productive writing, so writing for my manuscript. Wow. Of which I kind of put a hold on it because I was waiting to get this book that I'd already read, but I wanted a physical copy so that I could just grab it in the morning and just go for it. It's called Story Genius. It's very, very good in it, and it helps you to construct a first draft. So
Have you read Deep Work at all?
I have, yeah. Carl Newport.
Yeah. It's a brilliant book.
I think 2 or 3 of his books.
I'm reading it at the moment. I was like in the section at the start where it talks about why you should do deep work. I'm like, yeah, I agree. Like, and I just went straight to the section where it's part two, which starts speaking about how you set it in place. And it's definitely reinvigorated me for the next year ahead on and getting more things done, yeah, being more targeted.
I think it's just going to become, that book is going to become more and more relevant and more 100%. And more important. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to jump, Lauren, to the podcast itself.
Mm-hmm.
So what have your thoughts been on the actual podcast this year so far?
I guess we're actually getting to that point now where we're about to start doing video.
Mm.
And I think we need to.
Yeah.
Because I think we need to reinvigorate it and refresh it a bit.
Like, do you think that, because I've gotten to this point this year where I've sort of felt like, not that it's stagnant, but you know, still, obviously, we don't work on this full time.
Mm.
We do it casually on top of our jobs.
That's the frustration, I think.
And so, what are the things that can help grow this? And I feel like video is obviously one, which will start soon. Guests is another natural component, which just takes time. And would also be a lot easier if we were working on this full time.
Mm-hmm.
The studio has been a big one. Obviously, we've now got this space. We used to record this. If you listen back to last year's episode 52, you can hear about 20, 30 minutes in. We're like, oh, we can hear the fridge. Should probably turn that off. So that's
right.
Like, not having to have that is a big improvement as well. Mm. Guests, I mentioned, I think the interview process I've gotten a bit better at. We tried a little bit of advertising. Not too sure on that, though.
On other people's podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually have one suggestion for you.
What's that?
I was listening to one a little while ago, and I thought, I don't know if you started doing this order, because I don't think I've listened to many recent ones, but a lot of podcasts will have a break in the middle, and it just reminded me because you're talking about advertising, and I agree, really, it's kind of annoying when you listen to podcasts and suddenly someone comes in and starts advertising. But I thought, because I've listened to quite a few, and they are quite long, but you're interested in the content, but sometimes you guys take a break. I thought maybe it'd be a good idea, because you don't give the listeners a break. I thought so that's something you could have a look at and start experimenting with. Maybe you could come in, not necessarily do an advertisement, but maybe some of your intro stuff you could do in the middle. Just a thought.
Ah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a good point.
What else do you think we could do to improve it? Like, what don't you like about it right now? Are the intros too long? Yeah.
I think a consistent amount of time. I think you guys have started to do that a little bit more, but I really like it that it's completely long form, and so you guys, it's more like a conversation. But then I think really when you're sitting down, if you say, oh, let's grab a cup of coffee with someone, it kind of annoys me. A lot of people have this tendency where they'll be enjoying the conversation and they'll be like, okay, let's go do something else, or, you know, it'll just kind of, they'll want it to keep going forever. And it's like, usually I kind of have other stuff to do. Like, I might really be enjoying a conversation, but if we've met up for a coffee, I kind of, maybe I'm having dinner with someone else or something like that. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. Sometimes it frustrates me when I'm really enjoying one of your podcasts. I've got like a 45-minute train journey, and then I'm walking in and I'm kind of trying to slightly take my headphones off. You start seeing your coworkers walking into the building. Like, you're in the elevator. You seem a bit rude. You've still got your headphones on. You sit down at your desk. Your manager's like, hey, how are you doing? You're still listening to Jordan because you're like, I'm sorry, I'll talk to you in a minute, but I really like this podcast, so I'm just going to ignore you for a half an hour. Do you know what I mean? Like, it kind of, if you knew that this is really good and this is going to go for a certain amount of time, I think maybe it would be, but I don't know.
More useful.
Yeah, but almost force people to just like take a break and then come back to it.
It gives you a natural stopping point, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
It gives you like a target.
Yeah. And if you have a really good one, you can split it over two episodes, maybe. Like.
Well, that's, yeah. Well, there you go. We are thinking about doing that in the future episode. Don't know if we can talk about that yet, but.
Yeah, and then maybe you could have me back a third time. That's one.
Exactly. So, like, what do you reckon would be the perfect time for an episode?
I don't know. I don't know anything about podcasting. I've never done one before. I haven't studied the industry or anything like that. But as someone who's very, very infrequently listens to podcasts and pretty much listens to yours, I would probably think 45 minutes or an hour is a standard. Surely there's some kind of standard of block of time that people do.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, types like Joe Rogan and who you're only just learning about, and Tim Ferriss, their podcasts go for like an hour and a half.
I have listened to Tim Ferriss.
Yeah. So, but it varies. Like, it just...
Depends on the guest.
Yeah, I was about to say, it probably depends on your guests, whatever they are agreeing to, I would think would sit the kind of... If you can convince people to come in for an hour and a half, then, and they're still quality guests, then I don't know. I assume that the more popular or successful people are, the more there's a premium on their time. Yeah. That might be completely wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's mostly true, yeah.
Now,
so whatever you can get them. If you can consistently get high quality guests to agree to an hour and a half, then go for an hour and a half. But my guess would be that they're probably more... an hour and a half of actually being here and only a certain amount of time of talking.
Yeah.
Having never produced a podcast before, that is my complete assumption.
Yeah.
Well, now, I mean, it's worth probably, I'm sure you asked the guests themselves, but what their experience of it is, are they tired?
Yeah. Afterwards? Well, you can sort of sense that when you're having the conversation, you sort of crack on over an hour and they're just like, they start shuffling in their seat a bit. Yeah. And that's when I know. When I start saying that I want to jump to short, fast questions, that's when I've realized I've pushed it too far.
But that's also good for the listener when they hear that, they know that it's a really good way to end it. I think those short, fast questions.
Yeah, I think having that just gives them a target, like this is ending type thing.
Yeah. But that's the other thing, coming back to me listening to it on the train. If my train is pulling in, I'm about to come to the station or something like that. And I'm sure there's other examples that I could give, but I think it's a good tight analogy. If I start hearing, okay, and now I've got to the station, I'm getting off and I'm starting to hear the short, fast questions, I know, cool. I don't have to kind of pause here and come back to it sort of thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, favorite episodes. I know that the most popular one has definitely been Friendly Geordie, so Jordan Shanks.
The second one or the first one?
Both. He's easily were the top two. Isaac Butterfield, and surprisingly, because he doesn't have as big a following as these two, but Dion McCurdy was number three. And he was the free speech and voting advocate, which I found quite interesting. Do you have any particular favourite episodes, Lauren?
Dr. Carl was quite exciting.
Yeah.
It was just surreal listening to it. I think you've actually wrote them down there and they're actually the same as me. So what have you written?
Are they? Or have you just read it and gone, yeah, I'll take them?
No. I think Daniel Weber.
Confirmation bias.
Daniel Weber, which was episode, I'm not sure.
episode I'm reading from the notes.
I'm not very prepared, sorry.
I think Jeff Kennett was super fascinating. Dr. Carl, obviously, was one. I liked having Dan Monheit back a few times to talk about the media. Danielle Weber, I just, it's always intriguing when you meet someone and then you're chatting with them constantly on social media, whatnot afterwards. Like all the comedians that have come on are all like, we get along quite well now and chat through Messenger or Instagram or whatever. So that's been quite nice.
just before I forget, that reminds me of one other suggestion. I got a suggestion from somebody that, again, I don't know why I keep saying a friend or somebody. My girlfriend gave me, just to give her credit, she said to me that it's a lot more attention-grabbing, especially when people get emailed about my interviews, that I have the name of the person that I've interviewed at the start, and apparently it makes it a lot easier to find. And I found that with your podcast as well, that when it's got the name of the person at the start, like the title's always really cool. But yeah, I think you guys have started to do that now anyway.
I think this is something that we're sort of like disagreeing on a little bit. I want consistency. I just want them to be all the same. So I'm happy to have the people first. But you're like, no, we're going to have like a catchy title, like how and when.
I said the same. We had that's so funny. Our conversation went exactly the same. Yeah. And then I was convinced by Tamazin to be like, actually, no, you're right. Yeah.
So what if they don't know?
And I went back and changed all of them. Well, that's the thing. It doesn't matter because they still... From, I don't know, I can only talk about my my interviews, but I realized that the title of the email will always still be the name. So they'll know that it's not another type of email from me. It's an interview email. So they're more likely to actually open the email and see, and then see what the catchy title is. And also it's just way more important if they've heard that you've interviewed someone and they want to go back and they're searching for that name, it just makes it jump out so much easier. So it's more likely that someone is going to have recommended your podcast and recommended this is a really good one than I think that it is that they're just going to be randomly scrolling through and go, oh, that grabs my attention. Because even if you look at the app or something, and I guess it probably depends on what you're using, but I'm using the Google one, you're not getting the full title, and so you're not really getting the hook. You're actually just getting like it is or they were or one of the, you know, some of those Englishy words that just sort of get in the way. I don't know what they're
That's
called.
That's why Joe Rogan, once again, only does the name. But Tim Ferriss does the how and the what and the why. Yeah. And it's like, blah, blah, blah.
Again, I can only talk personally. What I've done is I've gone now with the name, and then it's something, you know, something that really grabbed me that was really interesting out of the interview, and so much more. And I don't know how that works, but I like it. I think that it sounds good because it's like, look, we are going to talk about this, and I think this is something interesting that they said. Trust me, but though that there's a lot more in this. But
let's try it out for the next 10 weeks and see how it goes.
I think short and sweet, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, I like that though. I've been thinking about that for a while. Like, do you have a hook or do you have? You know, like I've changed. I remember the title of the podcast actually used to have a hook in it, and I've just gotten rid of all of that.
Mm.
So it's a lot cleaner, a lot easier to identify what this is about. Because I noticed, you know, like all these highly downloaded marketing podcasty types have that, but it just looks shit.
Mm. I think it's, again, just one of those things that you have to think about and look at. And it's going to be different for everybody. Yeah. So.
Well, I look at those podcasts and I don't like them. Like, I don't I'll download that.
It can
that.
Be overwhelming to read. Like, you're like, what is this about?
Did you have any particular favorite episodes?
Yes. Can you rephrase the question?
Me, myself, and I?
Oh, yeah. Mine's great. Everyone should go listen to my one. I think Objectively Friendly Geordies was really good and jumped out to me, but super personally I like the one with you and MJ just because I was away and I hadn't talked to you guys and it felt like I was just sitting there having a conversation with you, because I often in the conversation like to just shut up and listen to you guys disagree.
Well,
so I felt like I honestly felt like I was actually there. It was
what I enjoy about our conversations with MJ is like he's the type of guy that really throws a ridiculous idea out there and we sort of mold it into something a bit more rational. I can remember countless times where we used to go to a restaurant, Shangdong Mama, with MJ, and he would just put out some stupid idea that was just had so many flaws, but he was sort of going in the right direction in sometimes. when he's back, we will definitely get him back on. I really enjoyed his episode, like hearing about his earlier life. Like, I had no idea, you know, like he was growing up in Sri Lanka and the fact that he essentially grew up in a war zone.
Yeah, it's and I shouldn't discount that as well. It was just a hugely interesting interview. And it's so amazing that you can know people for a really long time. You can ask them so many different questions. You can talk to them so many different ways. But the questions that you ask... I would never think to ask someone that I know, and you would get such interesting... I had no idea so much of what you guys talked about, and it was absolutely amazing. It was another part.
I had no idea either. I had no idea that he was going to talk about it, but he did.
Did you know he was in a band? Because I didn't know that.
I didn't. I knew he was in a band. I used to tease him at work a bit about that, his metal band. Maybe a bit too much. That I might have struck a chord, MJ, But
is that supposed to be a pun?
Yeah. Hilarious. But yeah, he was in a metal band, so that was quite funny. I think this year we've definitely identified our niche. Like in the first year or like first 6 months, it was all about startups and tech. And then in the last year, we've had probably a lot of like politics and cultural types, but also a bit of health and sport whacked in there. And I think that they're sort of our three pockets, like business and tech, politics and culture, health and sport. And we can just focus on people in those domains, leaders in that area. That's sort of where we do best. And those are the episodes that the people often respond to best and that I'm most interested in.
I think this is an interesting question that I've been thinking about recently, because I recommended the podcast to a couple of people and they asked me what it was. And I said that it is, my friend Jordan, interviews interesting, unique, successful people to try and break down and find out maybe a bit of their background and what it is that might be driving them. And also, I find it super interesting that it also talks a lot about immigration. It talks a lot about family backgrounds and nurture versus nature. So I think that you guys have had a kind of a, what do they call it? Unique perspective pitch or something? UVF or something like that? What is it called? I don't know what it's called. That's obviously changed a little bit. Would you say that I've correctly taken on and correctly sort of pitching it in the right way? Or
I'd say so. Yeah? I think the idea was to interview unique and interesting people. I think it's definitely more biographical.
Yeah.
Which Tim Ferriss does, Joe Rogan does in a little way. But like we could talk to someone who's in politics, but also cover a bit about their background and then understand why they have the views they have.
I had no idea that Jeff Kennett was the chairman from Beyond Blue. I thought that one was really interesting because there was a huge amount that I did not know about him, and I was really blown away with that
Well,
one, by the way.
That was so funny because I've told people this story a few times, but when we rocked up, I get in there and his assistant or his PA, who's he's had for like 20 years, comes in and she's like, "Hi, Jordan, good to finally meet you, blah, blah, blah. Have a seat here. He'll be with you soon." And he's in the room on the right and he's like, "Oh, hello." And then I come in, I go into the room, I start setting up. He's like, "Oh, who are you?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm here to do the podcast interview." "What podcast?" And then I'm like, "The podcast that your assistant organized." "What assistant?" And then, like, you know, like your PR lady organized this. He's like, "I don't have a PR lady."
He's playing with you.
And I'm like, "Oh, for your book that you just wrote about dogs." He's like, "What book?"
That is amazing.
And then I was just standing there like, I don't have anything left to say. I was like, "What's going on?" And then he's like, well, you're here now, so we may as well do it.
It just sounds like my dad.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, so he's playing with me from the start. And then he thought I was a journo. And he realized like halfway in the interview, about 15, 20 minutes in, he realizes I'm not, and he completely softens.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, he's just sitting there like, and there's
his answers at the start were interesting compared to them at the end.
Really?
Yeah. I thought so.
Very defensive.
They were, it was an interesting coverage for he's obviously very well practiced, as you would imagine he
would
be.
Well, he's had the media, you know, have a go at him a bit, but he was sort of, he had that, you know, classic thing where he's at the fireplaces there afterwards and he's sort of like, leaning. No one can see me doing this.
Were you standing up?
Yeah.
Huh? You were both standing up.
No, he was standing up and I was packing up. But
Jordan was doing the little teapot dance.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's that called?
He was sort of leaning against the fireplace.
They're not so casual.
I'm a little teapot.
Leaning just on the fireplace.
He's leaning against the fireplace and he's just, you know, we're talking about like football teams and who we support. And he's like, I said to my breakfast in Kyoto, he's like, "Oh, poor you." So that was quite funny. And then, you know, we finished up, walked out the front, and he's just sort of with his chest puffed out, just sort of looking out the street, and he's like, "Oh, well, have a good day."
He literally sounds like my dad. Yeah. You did the exact same voice for my dad.
Your dad could act like Jeff Kennett.
I mean,
they look
kind of similar.
That's another bit of feedback about your podcast. One of my favorite things is the voices that you do.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing.
You need to do more. You need to do more voices.
Well, you should be doing voice acting.
We interviewed a group called Stepmates a few weeks ago, and their episode will be out 2 weeks after this, I think. And they do some of the funniest voice comedy I've ever seen, because they do cartoons and a lot of it is just them, like, so Jim's mowing. They did, like, Jim's everything. And it's just them doing a voiceover of the logo of Jim's. And it's so fucking good. And so, yeah, I spoke to them. I hope they'll take me up on the offer of helping out to do voice acting. But in that episode, we do so many voices. It's so like an episode of voices.
I was downstairs because I don't obviously engage. I'm not in the podcast. I kind of wish I was in that one. And they were just, like, thumping, like... We're upstairs right now and I was below. I'm like, what is going on? Like, it's like a bunch of monkeys up there, like making all these weird noises. And like, yeah, right. I thought this podcast is going to sound really bizarre. It's just going to be all this like thumping and like cackling. And
oh, it was so good.
I can't wait
to
hear it.
Can you give us some of your little kid voice?
Jim's mowing!
To the little kid.
So
little baby.
I love little Jordan.
You know
so
what?
That's from, that's from F is for Family.
You know what?
There's a kid on F is for Family that whoever watches YouTube and knows Casey Neistat, it's like a kid version of Casey Neistat. It's fucking brilliant.
You know what?
My other favorite one is Consuela.
Doggy afuera. No, no, no.
Please do your normal kid voice that you do. For some reason, you do it for me sometimes. I'm not sure why I'm a child.
Normal kid voice. The problem with my voice is I need to see something.
You need to have
It's an impersonation more than it is a voice. So as soon as I see someone and I imagine what their voice is.
The kid voice that we do, I'm not doing it because it's embarrassing when I do it.
I can't remember
Excuse me, but can I have some chocolate, please?
Yeah.
That's not your best work, but...
He's not used to being put on the spot. He usually just does it when he's talking about something.
Yeah, I usually
like the
do
one that you
situation.
Do when you're just like upstairs and I'm downstairs and you call out and pretend you're a child. I don't know why. This sounds so strange in context.
We're really getting into the secret life.
I feel like our neighbours must think we're a bit strange because sometimes we're calling out to each other like in the stairwell.
Well, they're going to find out you don't have kids and they're going to be like, what?
Yeah, like we're running around in the staircase making these kids' noises. And
sometimes I'll sing random songs in like a just kid about voice. A word. And sometimes I'll just be
lush.
Just to annoy her. Because it's fun.
But it doesn't annoy me. I just laugh.
Yeah. I can't remember some of the voices I've got, but I should sort of...
Your dad's voice? The Scooby-Doo voice?
Oh, stop swearing. Stop it. Stop swearing.
Is that your dad when he sounds like Scooby-Doo?
He sounds like Scooby-Doo.
Jordan.
A dog.
Jordan.
Sounds like a
dog. It's like Scooby-Doo. That's my dad. I do it with my hair. My barber, she pisses herself laughing because somehow, like, we got talking about my dad and I did the voice. It's obviously not how my dad sounds, which we'll be seeing him in a few hours for dinner tonight. Like, hey, Dad, I was talking about you and your voices on the podcast. You'll love that. But, yeah, I hope that the Stepmates boys, they'll take me up on the offer because that'll be a lot of fun. I told them I'd do it free. I'm happy to. It's fun.
That's an interesting thing. You've interviewed some of your family, haven't you?
Yeah, I've interviewed my uncle, my auntie.
Mm. Was that really different or?
To normal interviews or just, it was, you know, there's things that I learned that I didn't know about either of them, particularly my auntie, just like about her earlier upbringing. And, you know, like she comes from a really fascinating family, like this family that had wealth and they were like just a white family living in the Philippines, like sort of a colonial style family. You know, her dad was like pretty sure he was a fighter pilot in World War II in the Pacific, something like that, or
really?
a pilot of some sort.
Tamerson's dad was, granddad was stationed in, yeah, he was a pilot as well, test pilot. And that's why she can get a Malaysian passport, but not a UK one, which she kept ranting about when we were in the UK. She was like, damn it, Mum. Yeah, because her mum was born in Malaysia.
Well, that's a lot of Malaysians. You know, I work with a few Malaysians and they speak about that. Like some of the older families from that sort of old money world.
Mm.
That's what Crazy Rich Asians was about, like sort of Singaporean Malay families.
Great movie.
Yeah, so those little things are super fascinating. My uncle was whinging recently that he ums too much in his episode. I was like, get over it. But it's just nice to. I think more than anything, I did it because my grandmother had dementia. I think both of them are interesting. I probably wouldn't do. I would like to do my parents or like maybe my dad, but maybe just keep that private. I don't really want people knowing who my family are. Like, I mentioned my sister and my brother and parents in the episodes, but I never mentioned their name because I just don't want people to find out who they are. Right. Because you never know. Like, what if this becomes a big thing and then people are harassing them? Or I just know how
this
sort of stuff.
You need some boundary.
Yeah, you need... I just don't want people to find out who they are.
My stomach is rumbling. Maybe you can't hear it through the microphone.
You can't hear it. Neural Media, the expansion of that has been super interesting this year. So... I think when we were talking, I just had this note from last year's episode. We had one client. We were just briefly talking about introducing it. Now we've got 3 to 4 who come and go over the space of a month. I think over the next year, we'll be able to make a bigger push for more.
Are you allowed to name the clients?
Development Ready is... They're all listed on the website. Development Ready, CoinJar, Go Markets, and then there was another one called Infinity Wellness. They're... Yeah, I mean,
what's the common factor do you think that pulling them towards?
I've realized is so the perfect demographic for us is probably someone in finance or tech. So finance being real estate, markets, investing, whatever, and sort of lifestyle businesses as well. And the common thing is that they need to engage their audience regularly through content. And by using us, it's sort of a very affordable but quality service. We've just done like a testimonial. We've done testimonial interviews with 3 of them so far. They all went for about 10 minutes and we're sort of compiling it into one video. So that was very intriguing just to hear why they value the service. And it seems, yeah, just the fact that you can get something like this pretty affordably, but it's not shit, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's been the big thing.
That makes sense.
We've noticed as well that they're mainly sort of business to consumer as opposed to they're not really selling to corporate because they need to engage that audience regularly. And also the extremes in the content that they like. So it's either really short video or really long audio, like 30, 60 second videos. I don't think we've ever made a video over 60 seconds. Have we?
No.
So... those are the two polar opposites. And you can tell because that's where most of the attention is right now on social media platforms.
What do you think about, I guess this probably isn't affecting you that much yet, but maybe it would in the future. I don't know if this is the right term, but in journalism things, they talk about church and state. So sort of your clients or those you advertise for versus your content.
The separation of content from...
Yeah, so like there's what is it, natural advertising
native,
or something? Native advertising, where they have so-called articles and then buried in the middle is like, FYI, like this wouldn't have happened if they had, used Mr. Clean or something. I don't know. It's a terrible example.
Yeah, well...
But is that affecting you now or will it affect you in the future?
No, because we won't run ads. The only, like we said this in last year's episode, the only time we'll run an ad is if we, A, have a big enough audience and B... we have something that we're really passionate about and therefore it's going to be like a multi-episode ad or sponsorship agreement. So there's that. The production for other people does not affect us because it's not related to this podcast at all. Like we'll announce to our listeners to say, hey, look at what we're doing, tell your friends type thing because this pays for us to do this podcast as opposed to running ads. So that's about the extent of what we do when crossing over audiences. But by and large, what people are really buying is production capabilities. It's not really... Yes, they're buying our editorial strategy, our ability to make something good, but it's not impacting this. So it's sort of this split. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, Neural Media technically makes this podcast, so it's only natural to... sometimes mention it throughout. I mean, we have the ad at the beginning for Neural Media.
Yeah.
But it's not like shoving it down your throat like, oh, by the way, and then we also do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mean, well, it try not to do that.
It doesn't affect how we make podcasts for other people, and the podcast for other people doesn't affect how we make our own.
So if a client hypothetically said to you, I don't want you to interview this person, what would that do?
Well, we tell them to fuck off.
But what? But they don't want us to interview the person on our podcast.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
so you guys had someone lined up that you can interview, and then one of your clients said, "Actually, no, don't interview."
Is this like a situation where they don't want to be aligned with
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of an example where church and state might influence you guys.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so, because the beauty about podcasts and having branded media, different little niche brands for media, is you don't get that often. You don't get those crossovers.
Sort of untouchable.
It's a problem with YouTube at the moment because there's so much, you know, you've got advertisers, like big advertisers coming to the platform. But the platform was really built by the community who are creating media that isn't brand safe, is the term. When I listen to DigiDay podcast, they talk about brand safe advertising. So yeah, you're totally right. It is a big issue. But for us, because we build these little niche things, it doesn't cross over. And if someone ever said that to us, I'd be like, why? What? How is that even related? You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, the Neural Media makes its own podcast and podcasts for others. They're totally separate brands. And unless you go on the website, you'd never know.
Right.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting, though. I wonder whether we'll have that in future.
It is interesting to bring it up. I actually didn't think about that.
Look, at the very least, Neural Media has paid for...
Yeah. Good question. Yeah.
At the very least, Neural Media has paid for this whole studio... Basically, we've got a paid for studio. So, if we decide tomorrow to stop doing that and just continue our podcast as a hobby and expanding it personally, at the very least, we've now got a full on pro studio for free. So, everything from this point onwards is really a bonus. Yeah.
I just think it's super on my mind at the moment. Recently, I was watching a TV show with somebody, and it wasn't this TV show, but I'll give the example of like MasterChef. And I think that they were a great idea, and I understand like TV and stuff. And so it's not necessarily a criticism, but my understanding is that they created a TV show to advertise products. So there's ads for the products in the ad space, but there's also during the show, they make it, there's this very specific product placement.
Block. No, wait, is it The Block?
No.
Block's, like one, Block's an example as well. So MasterChef was, I think, the first one.
Yeah.
And the people on the show, you know, there's producers and there's maybe two or three sort of celebrities, but everybody else is sort of an unpaid, quote unquote, contestant. Mm-hmm. And so this is starting to replace, you know, TV shows where you've got a production person, you've got actors, you've got writers. And so the producers now are sort of also becoming the writers, because they're the unpaid contestants. They are definitely scripting and setting things up. And I just think that it's really interesting, because I was watching something with someone and they were sort of saying, you know, just don't worry about it sort of thing. But I found it very hard to watch something that I knew was completely fake.
Yeah.
But then I realized that I watch TV shows that are scripted. Those obviously are also completely fake. And so I just think that it's becoming more and more of a problem and more interesting and more complex.
This is the thing in the age of social media. We're actually talking to Andrew Lauterstein about 2 weeks ago. And let's say with swimmers, they basically get paid nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only way that they can make money is influence. You know, the brand of Kathy Freeman or Ian Thorpe or whoever, that is influential. And therefore, when they go and do an ad for Speedo or Nike or whatever, that's the only way that they can really make money. And we're in this age, obviously, with social media, where it's easier to be influential and to show that influence and to monetize it. I think I just finished reading 3 books by Edward Bernays on persuasion, and influence is by far and away the most effective way of marketing.
Yeah.
That's why social media influencer marketing is probably one of the most popular areas on top of next to content at the moment, because it's way easier to get this person who's followed by 1,000, 2,000 people to advocate for your product and for the audience to genuinely take it on board, as opposed to just seeing it in the news feed on Facebook, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a super, super interesting era at the moment. But I've noticed now on certain platforms that they have specifically, this is a paid promotion.
They have to.
Yeah.
Hashtag like, ad.
Yeah. So, like Instagram, really funny. YouTube, I've was surprised by that. Like
they do have that, yeah.
Yeah, like some of the, you know, we were...
You have to.
One of my favorite channels is...
On the show that I was watching, they had the price of the product that was on the screen written below. And I at first hadn't really noticed it. And then I saw something I liked, and then suddenly I noticed the price.
Yeah.
And so I realized that's quite
yeah, there's advertising
but
standards.
There was
yeah.
but there was nowhere saying FYI this entire TV show is
TV must be different.
Yeah.
Because on Instagram and YouTube and I guess the platforms have decided
yeah.
too tight. Maybe. I don't know who decided to do that and who told them to do it, but people are doing it.
But after reading I haven't finished Influence yet, but I'm most of the way through Influence, and I'm starting to realize now it is a very old thing, and it was previously looked down upon. It was previously sort of shoved onto the government, you know, regulation, and you should be stepping in. But now I'm thinking, you know, my mind is sort of changing to, is it necessarily a question of good and bad, or is it more, it's always been around, Influence has always been around, and it is just another one of these things where it's how you use it. And yeah. on the other hand, you know, maybe this content that is being driven by, you know, native content advertisements or whatever it's called, you know, maybe we wouldn't have that content that we're enjoying if it wasn't allowed. So well, this on the other hand,
this is a major talking point in the industry. That's why I like listening to things like Digiday Podcasts and Recode Media, is how does the industry make money? Is it subscriptions? Is it advertising? Is it monetization through micropayments? And a lot of the discussion historically is that most content has only been conjoined with the advertising market in the last 70 to 80 years. Prior to that, you were actually physically paying for content. So we've become used to getting free content, and in return, we are the product. So that... But there's a lot of people contesting that with specific types of cryptocurrencies that allow you to use a platform and pay per, you know, article that you're reading, or you can tip the person afterwards and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I think the next 10 years will be interesting.
I think Wikipedia is something interesting to look at as well, because, you know, how good is it that you could go on there without ever having used it before, find one specific fact, and then never use it again, and go, okay, well, I'm not going to give a donation. Mm. Whereas before, you'd have to buy an entire block of encyclopedias from a salesman at your door.
Yeah.
So...
Well, you used to have to literally buy the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah. So...
I remember
There's definitely, I think, huge benefits that are often overlooked when this becomes a debate of, you know, well, we just shouldn't be doing native content advertising.
Yeah.
I also watched... Aaron Sorkin's Newsroom recently, which is a very, very good TV show. So I think it's partly on my mind.
Because Aaron Sorkin.
He wrote West Wing. So.
Oh, Newsroom.
Oh, The Newsroom.
The TV show.
The TV show. Yeah, I've definitely seen that. For some reason, I thought you were talking about this guy who's like a Wired or Recode Media journo who talks about this sort of stuff regularly.
Is he the doctor? No. I also read If Our Bodies Could Talk, which is quite good. I think I might be getting this story wrong. I might have made this up, but I think that he was originally, like, he's a medical doctor. He's got an MD, but he's moved now. He works for The Atlantic, and I think that he felt that he could do a lot more good by moving into the journalism space. So I think he's talked about this kind of thing a couple of times as well.
Mm.
Don't quote me on that though.
Anyway, key topics of the year. There's been quite a few. I don't think we're going to have enough time to go deep into all of these, but, the big one that I've noticed is obviously polarization, politics, and free speech has been a big one. I found it funny listening back on last year. So we spoke about phones and addiction, but this is that really picked up pace over the year as well. And I mean, my experience of the last year has made me make a concerted effort to improve that sort of stuff. And I think we spoke about it I don't know if it was Hon's episode or Andrew Lauterstein's episode, but we spoke about betterhumans.coach.me and how they have like this 1-hour article specifically focused on ways to improve how you use your phone. And you've done it now, right?
Yes, I've read the entire thing.
How have you found implementing all of these tools?
It sounds so dumb, but the biggest one for me was not using my alarms. I don't think anyone else does this. I had a really bizarre way of reminding myself to do things. And then I realized I could just use the reminder app in my phone. So now I no longer have I guess I always had a sense of urgency to do things, and then I just realized I don't have to do it now. It's just the reminder will be on my phone and I can look at it later.
Yeah.
And turning off most of my notifications really has actually helped me. I was really cynical about that.
Yeah.
But I'm always quite reactive. Like, I'll just pick it up and I'll see something and I'll have to read it at that moment.
This goes back to the deep work thing and distracting your...
Yeah, like being just in the zone and letting yourself focus and not at all. Like, even like, I didn't realize my phone was distracting me, and I think you were trying to tell me that and I was... very anti.
So I've deleted all social media except for Instagram, which has a 15-minute time limit a day, and YouTube. Mm. I've got Reddit, but I don't actually really use it anymore. Probably delete it soon. Notifications is the biggest one. It's really hard. And I said this last year, but I've had this now for a month. It's very, very hard for people to contact me unless they call me.
That's actually quite frustrating. I don't like that, but anyway.
It's just what I'll have to be.
It gives me an anxiety attack
because
when something happens
to me. Because the moment I turn notifications back on, I'm constantly interrupted.
You are definitely more distracted than
because
I'm
an extroverted person. Yeah. So naturally, I'm going to look for contact with people more, but it's a fake type of contact. And I get so much more done now. I've changed the way that I work on a daily basis, which means I'm able to get in for a good hour and a half on something without being distracted at all and actually feel like I've achieved it. You know, sort of you've built up over the hill and you're sort of on your way down when you've got a major task to do, as opposed to slowly chipping away at it. Because, you know, someone texts you to ask you, like, what do you want for dinner tonight? We're having people over. Or, like, you know, how do I fix this problem? What do you want to say to this customer? Like, all those sort of stupid questions that... You know, even work at CoinJar, now that I've got that, previously I would be interrupted and now I can just blanket reply to people at like the start, middle and the end of the day. It's just so much better. I don't know about you, Mickey. What do you do with your phone? Do you do anything like this?
I do. Mine's quite a can of worms. Do you want me to go through everything that I do?
give us the top three, four things that you do.
The top three or four things that I do to ensure productivity and negate social media and my mobile phone impacting it.
Yeah.
The most recent thing that I've done, or I guess when I was in Belfast, the sun comes up and goes down at different times, so it does here, which really kind of messed with my sleeping pattern quite a bit. So I used a Lumi light, which helped. Like, we completely blacked out our room, so there wasn't any sun that could get in. Because in summer it will go down at like 12 and it will come up at like 4 a.m.
12 midnight.
Yeah, that's
brutal.
11:30, sometimes 12. Yeah, it was really brutal. And in winter, you know, it will go down at 5 p.m. and it'll come up at, you know, 9 a.m. so it's really I got a Lumi light, which is great. So basically it wakes you up using light, so it slowly increases the level of light in the room, and then at night you can have it so that it slowly decreases the amount of light, which is really because I'd be reading and then it would slowly kind of turn the lights out, so it forced you get sleepier and sleepier and it goes out. So I don't have, so now I'm really bad with it and I haven't really mastered it yet, but I don't have my phone in my room. I charge it somewhere else. And so what I want to try and do, I want to get to the point now where I walk in the door, I kind of just put my phone next to the door and all of my stuff, and then I don't use my phone while I'm in the house. Second thing is I've tried and I'm still kind of failing, but to have a no screen day on Sundays. So I just do board games and reading and that kind of stuff. Like, if you want to hang out with me on Sunday, you have to have organized it beforehand and kind of get there.
Oh, really?
But I'm not really succeeding at it yet.
it's hard.
I use Inbox, which is an app from Google, which unfortunately they're discontinuing in March. So it's not very good advice for people who want to do it. But basically you get an email and you can mark it as to do or something like that, and you can put a label on it. And you can also put reminders in there. So everything was just kind of in one point. And as you were saying, like, I don't have alerts on my phone or notifications from email, that kind of stuff. So whenever I would want to look at my emails, I would be going through them, and it's also my to-do list kind of thing. So I was very centralized, didn't have to worry about forgetting anything like that. Cause you can also, say, oh, I'm not going to do this today, do it tomorrow, that kind of thing. So you can actually get to a point where it's a clean escape. So you've either, looked at something or said, I'll do it tomorrow, which I found really good. Like, you just get such a sense of achievement where it's like, my inbox is empty. You know, my to-dos are kind of empty. And it really helped as well because, you know, you get so much spam. Like, I was either, like, every time I get a spam thing, I'd either unsubscribed or say, you know, I want to unsubscribe. So now I hardly get any emails. Like, they're all productive ones.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've only got one more thing to say about this. I'm sure there's something probably more.
What about the
blue screen is also something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it gray screen or no? Blue screen.
I use gray screen.
Yeah. So
that's too much for me.
I have a Pixel 2 now, so it does automatically. So yeah.
That's too much for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know it makes it less exciting, but
what people don't realize I'm doing is I'm turning this thing into grayscale.
Yeah. My grayscale comes on automatically at 8 p.m. So it's very early and it winds me down a lot.
Interesting. Yeah. I
probably should do that. Just yeah. Stop being so cynical.
So many times you find that I'm just like, no, I'm just gonna turn that off tonight. Like,
yeah.
I want to do stuff. All right, leave me alone.
The major problem I have right now is...
I thought of my fourth thing.
Oh, yeah.
Can I swap it out? So I changed a couple of years ago. I changed my Facebook to Oliver Fisher because I decided I just wanted to use that as a platform to reach people and to talk about writing, that kind of stuff. Sick of the newsfeed thing. Someone told me that you can set it so it's only news. So I tried to turn off all of the things so that it was just news information coming through. And then I realized that was just junk. I'm not getting anything out of that. So then I basically wasn't using Facebook and it was only on Oliver Fisher. I recently compared like Google Plus, Twitter, Facebook and decided like it was better to just focus on one platform. So now I've just completely gotten rid of Facebook. I haven't had Facebook for quite a while. And even before I had it, I wasn't really using it. I haven't probably used it for the last like 5-ish years.
It's
not the way that most people use it.
Facebook's dead though, isn't it?
No, it's not.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, for our generation, I think it is.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that if you look at the app, like maybe it's not the hip cool thing,
yeah.
But it's just the problem is it's dead in the sense that it's ingrained in the consciousness. It's not a conscious thing anymore. It's completely subconscious, in my opinion.
Yeah.
People still have it. Mm. The amount of time they spend on it, they have no idea, especially I think people our age. Whereas I think older people probably use it more. They use it a lot, but they've realized they're at the point we were at, I think 10 years ago, where we knew we were using it and it was kind of fun. And then slowly but surely it starts to become what you think you're using it for is different to what you're actually using it for. And then you get to a point where you don't even notice that you're using it anymore. It's your core platform. And you think like, oh, I only spend a little bit of the time on Facebook. But then if you look at the overall number of time, like the amount of time daily that you spend on those kind of things, it's like, wow, that's actually increased. Do you know what I mean? That proportion of Facebook there, but actual, I guess, percentage versus absolute time sort of thing.
Well, this reminds me, the social media thing reminds me of the other major topic, which has been that polarization of free speech. And we'll, like we did in the last annual review episode, we'll link this 5 to 8 minute snippet from Niall Ferguson at the very end, I think. But it was just a very interesting analogy talking about where we are as a society right now, because this has been a topic that's been covered from people who work in politics, media, comedy, culture, and even business. Like, I think everyone's spoken about it. And it's just made me realize how important comedians are in this day and age. But essentially, the analogy is that from this guy, Niall Ferguson, who came up with the idea that where the advent of the internet was like the advent of the Gutenberg printing press, but particularly the, you know, social media on smartphones was as disruptive as that. The most disruptive thing to our political or public sphere since the Gutenberg printing press. And he said it's a bit of a frightening analogy because that caused the Reformation. You know, the idea essentially from Martin Luther that economic power and cultural relics and all the things that came from the Catholic Church were irrelevant. And that was quite a radical idea back then. And you can see, you know, like back then the most popular book, I can't remember the name, it's starts with M, was a book about witches in society. And you can sort of see this with like the Me Too movement. It's sort of become a witch hunt, sort of overtaken what it was. We're in this very interesting period now where there's a lot of polarization, a lot of angst and a lot of similarities to that era. And I just wonder where this all goes, because there's been a bit of violence, but I know that that's sort of what started during the Reformation as well. And then it really picked up. you know, like, I don't know if many people have read about the Reformation. We'll put in some links, but there's some pretty shocking stuff that happened back then. I know it was like the 1500s, the late 1500s, but, you know, there's something called... I reckon this is where, like, Game of Thrones gets its inspiration from. There's something called Bartholomew's Day Massacre. Mm-hmm. Was, like, this massacre in Paris where, like, 20,000 people were killed because they're a Protestant. Yeah, it's pretty gnarly, gnarly stuff. You know, you had the German Peasants' War, which is like a war of 500,000 peasants fighting nobles. You had the French War of Religion, which went for 30 years. Some pretty pretty crazy stuff.
I guess... Sorry.
No, you go. That's fine.
Mine's very short. But can we compare religious sort of conflict?
Well, religion was the key cultural topic of the day.
That's true.
Yeah, so my question was, like, what was that about the Me Too movement with in terms of witches?
Yeah,
I mean, the Me Too movement is a legal question, isn't it? I mean, they're trying to change something to do.
Some people are.
But I guess yeah, I'd want you to just talk about that a bit more, because you kind of just said that you just matched those two things together and then didn't
really. So, like, obviously the witch burning was basically people would say someone was a witch and you would have... social justice. You would people that would pull in the person. There was no real legal system that they were put through. It was mainly done by the church, and then they were burnt at the stake. The thing now is that people are accused of something on Twitter, and there's obviously sickening cases. I think a lady named Bettina Arndt has started covering this in a recent book, but there's cases like Harvey Weinstein, but now... there's people that are claiming that everyone is like Harvey Weinstein, which is just not the case. And they're having their entire careers, entire lives ruined because of it. And all because someone will go on Twitter and make some sort of claim.
Yeah, I don't know. I try and avoid actively all of this kind of stuff. I mean, obviously not being on Facebook. Like, I look at it a little while ago. I just thought, you know, is this actually serving me and helping me to achieve my goals? Because am I helping anybody, or am I doing it? And I sat down and tried to work out what was entertainment versus what was informing me or helping me to help other people or to help achieve what I wanted to help. And a lot of this stuff just fell out of the category of this is pure entertainment. And I can't remember the German word for it, but, like, you know.
Schadenfreude.
But yeah,
Schadenfreude. I don't know, man. This is getting... to a point where it's impacting people's lives directly. Like,
well, what I was going to say was that
the Me Too movement,
I think that you're taking, like, that's obvious. What you then took was a bastardization of that. That's nothing to do. Those things aren't anything to do with each other. There's not a catchy coin word that I think that I know of for what you were talking about. There probably should be, but I think that that's very different to what the Me Too movement was. You know, what happened with burning of witches was very, very different.
Yeah, but it's the same process.
It's an analogy.
Yeah, it's an analogy. It's not the same thing, obviously. Mm. Like, the witch burning was, like, very, very violent, and but a lot of the elements are as radical. It's like there's no due process. It's just this person's guilty, and that's it.
Mm.
No, like, you know, in America, they've got this system now.
But talking about those two things, so there's three things that you're talking about. Do you know what I mean? Like, the what you're talking about, the people, you know, being judged during executioner for someone's behavior is very different to what the Me Too movement is trying to do. And I think that there's a problem there with talking about those two things as if they're one, if that makes sense.
What is the Me Too movement trying to do?
I have no idea. Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, sorry.
And I don't think anyone...
Me Too movement started in Hollywood.
My understanding was that they're trying
predators in Hollywood.
Yeah, well, my understanding was that they were trying to change the law to be more transparent, to be more productive in terms of what you can do when there is a problem like this.
I don't think so. I've not seen anyone state that it's to do with law other than it's a...
Well, that's the thing. It's a silent majority, isn't it? Like,
that's what I mean, though. This is what happens with these sort of movements is, you know, maybe, and particularly when they're leaderless.
Yeah, and you can but you can talk about a lot of ideologies and a lot of things that happen. There's often a surface movement where there's the people that are actually trying to achieve something and the things that are actually happening compared to what you hear about, like this sort of iceberg thing.
Well, the Me Too movement is like one component of multiple movements that are happening globally. the actual thing that we're talking about is polarization.
Right.
You know, radical left, alt-right groups are becoming more and more pervasive in society and larger and more prominent. You know, like the thing that we linked in last year's episode was Chamath Palihapitiya talking about the fact that there were lynchings in India through rumors spread on WhatsApp.
Wow.
About someone. Something to do with someone being a pedophile or someone being a rapist or something like that, and multiple people were lynched in a village because of it. And so that's what we're sort of getting at. Yeah, it hasn't had that effect in the West, but all you have to do is look at that WhatsApp case to know that this has the massive implications.
Yeah.
And yeah, Me Too movement is not the same as...
It's more about being reactive. Like, everything is so instantaneous everything is taken so, like, oh, I just saw it on social media, it must be true.
Yeah,
and
it's both these polarized groups using these platforms to go to what they're trying to get to and circumnavigating the systems that we all have had in place since the end of the Reformation and the Treaty of Westphalia, which was... We have nation states and we have rules and we have laws and we have commerce and we all work together on that. It's no longer the church runs the state. It's the state runs the state and we're largely secular and we follow these enlightenment ideals. But now we're sort of, because of these tools that we've got, we're sort of falling back into those ways where it's just like...
Tribal.
No, yeah, it's tribalism. That's what it is. So
do you think the people that are talking though... that potentially aren't doing that many things are having that great influence on those that might not be involved in those discussions?
What do you mean?
So, when, say, someone commits a crime and then that crime is reported and then they go through the judicial system, previously it might have been, you know, there might be a journalist or someone that might be reporting falsely on what has actually happened and other people are forming opinions based on that. And then they're having discussions and then the courts, my understanding, would try and find someone who hasn't been influenced by that and who is then, you know, an objective juror. And whether or not that system worked is a different point. But then, there, you know, someone would pass judgment and then that would happen. What you're talking about now is potentially that, you know, are we reaching a point where the people having conversations outside of that system are influencing the system? Do you think that there has been a change?
100%. I think that there's no possible... I mean, all you have to do is look at that Making a Murderer series. You can impact the outcome of someone's situation just simply through messaging. The spread of content is so fast and so quick nowadays that there's no way of rationally viewing a situation unless you really look into it deeply and you spend weeks looking at it. And that's my problem is, like, you know... That Making a Murderer is a fine example of what can happen when movements like Me Too just think that you can claim that someone sexually assaulted you. I'm not discounting the fact that it could happen to that, or it has happened, but to say that that's the way that we process these problems now, to me, is a very flawed way of approaching society. Dangerous.
Again, I think that the important question here is individualism versus institutionalization. My understanding was that the Me Too movement was trying to use social media to impact institutions, not to punish individuals. Initially, that was the way that they were going about it. So anyone who then, after that fact, tried to use correctly or incorrectly that power to influence individuals' lives, I don't think is probably correct. But I think is something different. There should be distinct actions. And things that happened there should be a distinction between those two things. But more importantly, I think in a greater sphere, talking about polarization, do you think that it is an individual problem and there should be an individual solution, or do you think it's an institutional problem and it should be an institutional solution? So what I'm saying is, do you think that individuals, we should be, you know, maybe looking at ourselves a little bit more critically and saying, maybe I shouldn't be engaging with this stuff. Maybe I should be, you know, instead of just going, oh, I think that something happened, I should get on social media and tell everyone I don't think that's a good thing. Compared to writing a letter to my MP, that would be, you know, you're saying an individual problem and therefore an individual solution. Or is an institutional problem, an institutional solution, where we should be saying, why aren't these institutions stepping in and being more clear and more fast, yeah, and more 100%. Reactive and saying, these people, like...
I think it's an institutional thing. I think we're getting to a point now where our digital lives are becoming so related to our actual lives and so impactful, even more so on our actual lives, that their main people are talking about things like the idea of a digital bill of rights or laws that reflect the current world we live in impacting the digital world as well. I don't know what that looks like, but I don't think that you can rely. I mean, mob violence is just so easy to fall into. I mean, look at the protests that happened in France in the last, I'd guess, 4 weeks of the Yellow Vest protests and how that shit can just really spin out of control. You need, I think, systems that most of society agrees upon or is, you know, has voted upon in some way through legislation that gives that means that there is repercussions for how you act online, I think.
So if that is the solution, if it is an institutional problem and there needs to be institutional solutions, as hypothetically, you know, logical, moral, ethical people, let's assume that we are and that I am, should I be doing something? Should I be... Yeah. On social media, what solution do you think that I should be partaking in? Do I have an...
I don't know that you can prevent it.
So, I don't have a moral responsibility to do anything.
Of course. But the thing is that...
Of course I do or of course I don't?
Of course you do. Oh, anyone could say that.
I'm so busy, Jordan.
But the problem with social media is that it just pulls on all the monkey mind elements of us as humans that it makes it really, really hard to prevent yourself from doing that. So, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. All I know is I need a piss.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I also don't know what the answer is. And I also need to urinate.
But look, we've nearly cracked on an hour and a half, but thank you both for doing this again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, listeners, for listening for a start. I think Lauren and I definitely appreciate it. And it's been a good year and some very exciting guests coming up in the new year. So, thank you all.
Congratulations to you both on your 100th episode.
Cheers.
So what is it like? That's the question you should always be asking about the present. What the hell is this like? And every day, in every edition of the New York Times, somebody will tell you that it's the 1930s. And then in the Washington Post, somebody will tell you that it's the 1970s. But I'm here to tell you that all these analogies with the mid-20th century are of no use at all, because the structure of the public sphere has been changed so much by the internet that it's nothing like the mid-20th century, our time. Our time most closely resembles the period after the late 15th century when the printing press, hey, you laugh, sir. That's what I like to hear, incredulity. Because it's a typical American response that anything that happened before the United States is irrelevant to the history of the United States. You're wrong. You're so wrong. Let me show you how wrong you are. Nothing has happened like the impact of the personal computer and the internet since the advent of the printing press. And here's the proof. If you look at the impact of these two technologies, it's incredibly similar. The effect of the technological innovation is drastically to reduce the cost of producing content and drastically to increase the volume of content. These two graphs are the same, one for the printed book, the other for the personal computer. What's the difference? The time scale. History today happens 10 times faster than it did at the time of the printing press. But that's the only significant difference, except for one more I'll come to. So the better analogy for thinking about our time is not the 1930s. It's not Watergate. That's all very interesting, but we live in a different time. We live at a time of massive technological disruption of the public sphere, and most of us underestimate it, especially those of us who cling to old ways of getting information like newspapers made of paper. We underestimate the extent to which our time is a time of communications revolution as dramatic as the time of The Reformation. Oh, yes. This is a scary analogy. It is not a funny analogy, sir. It is a bloody terrifying analogy, because when they introduced the printing press into Europe, everything was going to be awesome. Martin Luther, for it was he, just 501 years ago said, if everybody can read the Bible on a printed version of the text in their own language, everything will be awesome. He didn't quite use that word. What he actually said was, we'll achieve the priesthood of all believers the Bible speaks of. Not quite what happened. What happened was that, yeah, Martin Luther's sermons were rapidly spread throughout all of Europe thanks to rapid production by printing presses. But so were books like the Malleus Maleficorum, which argued that witches live amongst us and have to be burnt at the stake. That book, the Malleus Maleficorum, the Hammer of Wickedness, was one of the bestsellers of the 16th and 17th century. That's a good example of fake news. And it's a good example of something going viral that is a good deal more harmful than a cat video. You know how it is that people are always wanting to tear down statues these days? Have you noticed that? And rename things? Iconoclasm is a typical product of a disruption of the public sphere. Suddenly we must efface the icons of the previous era. That happened in the period of the Reformation too, as in this illustration of a church getting a full Protestant makeover in Antwerp in 1566. Polarization in the 16th and 17th century escalated rapidly from verbal violence, you're a heretic, no, you're a heretic, no, you're a heretic, into actual violence. The threshold between verbal violence and actual violence is a very fragile fence, and they crossed it, and they spent 130 years crossing it. The wars of religion that persisted from the peasants' revolt that followed Luther's Reformation all the way to the end of the 30 Years' War in 1648.
Thank you for making it this far. Before you run off, we have a quick ask for you. Subscribe on your podcast app. Subscribing will give you priority access and help your fellow-minded listeners find Uncommon. Or you could also share with a friend. This will go a long way in building our audience, which will help us both get further guests on the show. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube by searching Neural, which is N-E-U-R-A-L-L-E. But until next time, thanks for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Neural Media is an effortless and affordable content production service. We help businesses save time and money by taking away the pain of producing content. If you want to grow your audience through content production, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Create a quote and request a callback from me personally. If you want to learn more about the benefits of growing your audience, download our free series on how to create content at the bottom of neural.com/media. Listeners to this podcast receive a special 10% discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON.